The reading is from Esther 4, verses 1 through 17. A message from Mordecai saying, who's Esther? Thanks, Deb. I didn't know I was doing this at all. Whew. Okay. A dramatic reading for the text readers, narrator Esther and Mordecai. Mordecai, I'm the narrator. When Mordecai learned that all had been done, he tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes and went through the city, walking, wailing with a loud and bitter cry. He went up to the entrance of the king's gate, for no one might enter the king's gate clothed in sackcloth. In every province, whenever the king's command and his decree came, there was great mourning among the Jews with fasting, weeping, and lamenting, and most of them lay in sackcloth and ashes. When Esther's maids and her eunuchs came and told her, the queen was deeply distressed. She sent garments to clothe Mordecai so that he might take off his sackcloth, but he would not accept them. When Esther called for Hathach, one of the king's eunuchs, who had been appointed to attend her, and ordered him to go to Mordecai to learn what was happening and why. Hathach went out to Mordecai in the open square of the city in front of the king's gate, and Mordecai told him all that had happened, and the exact sum of money that Haman had promised to pay into the king's treasuries for the destruction of the Jews. Mordecai also gave him a copy of the written decree issued in Susa for their destruction, that he might show it to Esther, explain it to her, and charge her to go to the king to make supplication to him and entreat him for her people. Hathach went and told Esther what Mordecai had said. Then Esther spoke to Hathach and gave him a message for Mordecai, saying,
all of the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that if any man or woman goes to the king inside the inner court without being called, there is but one law. All alike are to be put to death. Only if the king holds out the golden scepter to someone may that person live. I myself have not been called to come into the king for 30 days.
When they told Mordecai what Esther had said, Mordecai told them to reply to Esther,
do not think that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silence at such a time as this, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another quarter, but you and your father's family will perish. Who knows? Perhaps you have come to royal dignity for just such a time as this.
Then Esther said in reply to Mordecai,
go, gather all the Jews to be found in Susa, and hold a fast on my behalf, and neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maids will also fast as you do. After that, I will go to the king, though it is against the law, and if I perish, I perish.
Mordecai then went away and did everything as Esther had ordered him.
This year, on the second Sunday of Advent, we find ourselves in that time before the birth of Christ, way before the birth of Christ, a time of exile, a time maybe 100 years away from the destruction of the temple, after the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem. We are a good 400 years away from the birth of Christ. Last week, we were 600. This week, we're 400 years away, and we long for the one to come. For the destruction of our temple where we believe God lived, and in the exile of our people, some to Babylon, some to Egypt, some to other parts unknown. We are scattered. We are no longer a holy nation with a king. We are strangers in many foreign lands. But even more than that, we are several generations of being strangers in a foreign land. So much so that for those of us exiled to Babylon, we're now under Persian rule. We are so far away from being a people who all live together, worshiping God in God's house. We are now trying to hang on to our identity, trying to hang on to our God in a world that does not know our God, in a world that really doesn't care about our God. Even though the people of God have been in exile, the world marches on. The king of the hour for Persia is King Ahasuerus. He rules over 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia, and he lived in Susa. One day he holds a banquet for all of his officials. Nobles were there, governors of the provinces, heads of the armies. The king showed off all of his wealth and the splendor and pomp of his majesty for 180 days. It was a banquet for 180 days. When the banquet was over, he gave another banquet for all of the people, well, all of the men in Susa, both great and small, and that banquet lasted 7 days. The king lives a very lavish lifestyle, as you can imagine. Every linen is the finest, all of the food is the best, and the wine is lavished on people without restraint. The king does have a queen, Queen Vashti, and she gives a banquet for the women at the same time. As you can imagine, by the 7th day of the second banquet, the king is what the biblical texts call merry with wine. He decides he wants Queen Vashti to come before him wearing her royal crown. Some scholars think that that's all he means, is just her royal crown, so that he can show her off to all the men that are gathered. He sends for her, and Queen Vashti refuses to come and be shown off. Well, the king is furious and decides to consult the sages, the wise ones who know the laws. What should happen to Queen Vashti? One of the sages says, not only has Queen Vashti done wrong to the king, but also to all the officials and all the people who are under the king's rule. For this deed of the queen will be made known to all women, causing them to look with contempt on their husbands, saying, Queen Vashti didn't do what the king ordered, so I'm not going to do what you order. And they will rebel, and there will be no end to it. To correct this horrible situation, Queen Vashti can no longer be queen, and a decree must be sent out that declares that women are to honor their husbands, and every man should be master in his own house. Doesn't that make us women want to go back to those good old days, the biblical days? I know. It even hurt to say it. Sorry. Okay. The king's servants decide to gather beautiful young virgins and let the king choose a new queen. Now, there's a Jew in the city of Susa. His name is Mordecai, son of Jer, son of Shimei, son of Kish, a Benjaminite. Kish had been carried away from Jerusalem among the captives, carried away with the king of Judah, who King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon had carried away. Mordecai brought up his cousin, Hadassah, that is Esther, because her mother and father had both died. Esther was beautiful. When the servants started gathering the beautiful young virgins, they gathered Esther too. Mordecai told Esther not to reveal that she is Jewish or a stranger in a foreign land. The king really likes Esther and provides her with cosmetic treatments and food and 7 maids of her own and places them at the very top of the harem. There's not any problems with this text at all, right? It appears that after 1 year of cosmetic treatments, then the king sleeps with each girl to decide who's going to be the new queen. When Esther goes to visit the king decides that she will be the new queen and sets the royal crown on her head and throws a banquet in her honor. Now, Mordecai spends his days hanging around the gate to the king's palace to make sure that Esther is okay. One day he overhears 2 people conspiring to kill the king, and he tells Queen Esther, who tells the king, and she gives Mordecai credit. The men are arrested and they're hanged on the gallows. After this, the king promotes a man named Haman and makes him his right-hand man. All of the king's servants and all of the people bow down to Haman because he was so close to the king, except for Mordecai. People ask Mordecai why he doesn't do as he should, and he says, because I'm a Jew. It infuriated Haman that Mordecai will not bow down, so he plots to destroy all of the Jews, not just Mordecai, all of the Jews. One day the king and Haman are casting lots, Purim, and choose a day and a month. Then Haman told the king that there's a group of people who are scattered across his kingdom, and they have different traditions and different laws. They don't observe the king's laws. If you will give me permission, I will destroy them for you. The king agrees, and Haman has the power to destroy. He has letters sent out to all of the king's territory, giving orders to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews, young and old, women and children, on one particular day. When Mordecai hears what is going to happen, he tears his clothes and puts on sackcloth and ashes and goes through the city wailing with a loud and bitter cry. There's great mourning among the Jews with fasting and weeping and lamenting. When Esther hears that Mordecai is wearing sackcloth and ashes, she sends him clothes, but he refuses to wear them. So she sends one of the king's servants to find out what in the world is going on, because she's behind the beautiful palace walls and has no idea what's happening out in the world. Mordecai gives the servant a copy of the killing order and asks the servant to tell Esther to go to the king and ask him to save her people. The servant does as Mordecai asks, as you heard, and Esther says, no one can just go see the king. You have to be invited. The king has not invited me in a month. Anyone who appears the king without being invited is put to death, unless the king holds out the golden scepter to that person. The servant tells Mordecai what the king has said, and Mordecai replies to the queen, you will not escape death as a Jew in the king's palace. For if you keep silent at such a time as this, deliverance will come from somewhere else, but your family will perish. Who knows, Esther? Perhaps you've come to royal dignity for just a time as this. Esther fasts for 3 days and then goes to see the king. The king holds out the scepter, so she is allowed to approach the king. He says whatever she wants, he will give to her, even to half of his kingdom. Esther says, you know, I'd really like to hold a banquet for you and Haman tonight. So the king and Haman came to the banquet. While they're drinking wine, the king says, Esther, whatever you want is yours. And Esther says, what I would really love is for you and Haman to come to another banquet tomorrow. In the meantime, the fact that Mordecai does not bow down to Haman, God hit the best of him, and he plots to have Mordecai hung in the morning. But that night, the king can't sleep for some reason, and he decides to read the book that has a log of all the activity of his kingdom in it. And he asked his servants if they had ever honored Mordecai for letting the king know of the plot to kill him. They said no. When Haman shows up the next morning, the conversation takes an unexpected turn when the king asks Haman how best to honor a loyal person. And Haman answers, thinking it's him. And the next thing Haman knows, he's taking the best robes and the best horse, and robing Mordecai and leading him through the city on the horse, proclaiming that the king honors Mordecai. That evening was the second banquet. And at that banquet, Esther asked the king to save her life and the lives of her people. She reveals who she truly is. And when the king hears what Haman has done, the king orders him killed. A woman, a young virgin woman, not of the majority of the people, but of the minority. The one who practices a different religion, looks different. Her name sounds like one of ours, but her real name is foreign sounding to us. A young woman who had no power to keep herself from being in a harem uses everything she can to save her people. She stands in a very risky place for such a time as this. Instead of sitting safely behind the palace walls and pretending to be one of the majority, she speaks to the ultimate earthly power, the king. She speaks up for justice. She speaks up for peace. She speaks up knowing that she could be killed just for speaking. Have any of us ever found ourselves in that serious of a situation? A place where we could be killed for speaking up for justice? But at the same time, it would kill us not to speak up for such a time as this. The words of a woman saved God's people, and she did it knowing that she could perish. By the way, there's no mention of God anywhere in this book, and yet God's people are saved. And as the story always seems to go in the Old Testament, when you get to chapter 9, God's people then killed those who were going to kill them. So where is Advent in all of this? You might be asking yourselves, as I asked myself last night. Where is God in this story? Where are the carols? Where are the cookies baking? Where are the packages wrapped in beautiful paper and gorgeous ribbons and bows? What about the decorations? What are we doing with a text from around 490, long before the 9 months before Jesus is born? We need Elizabeth pregnant with John and Gabriel and Mary and Joseph. Instead, we're reading and hearing about a woman, a young virgin who uses everything she has for such a time as this. Maybe this is an Advent text. Not as we today understand the Advent season, but the Advent that caused the people to dream and vision and long for the day the one from God would come. Long before Advent became an extended Christmas commercial, the people of God were in exile, thrown about different countries, different cultures, different gods, different everything. And all they had to hang on to was the belief that God was with them no matter what. No matter the injustice, no matter the bullying, no matter if they could not see or hear God, God was with them. But life was very, very hard. And if the one whom God promised would just come, Esther, Mordecai, and the rest of the Jews have no other choice but to wait for an otherwise unnamed, silent God to answer and act. Which is where God's people, us, are many, many times. Mordecai's question to Esther of, who knows, but that you have come to this position for just such a time as this, as an invitation to wrestle with hope and faith. For such a time as this. Is there a place where we can stand and bring a light of the goodness of God where people have nothing left but to wait for an otherwise unnamed silent God to answer and act? Is there a risky place we need to be standing? Believe me, the saving acts of God have come from stranger places than us. A young virgin Jewish woman? Oh, maybe that happened twice. A babe born in a lowly stable? But we are here now, bearers of the good news for such a time as this. May we have the strength and courage of Esther. O come Emmanuel, and ransom captive Israel in lonely exile here until the Son of God appear. Amen. At this time in our service, we invite those